Hello and welcome to our show today. I'm Jason Papier.
And I'm Peter Johnson.
And we've got a great show for you today.
We're going to be featuring an interview with Norm Boone, and we're going to be talking about something that successful investors should know about called investment policy statements.
I'd like to quickly interject that you can find out more on this topic by reading the show notes at promoneytalk.com. Also, while you're there, you can sign up for our mailing list. Once you're on our mailing list, you'll get emails when new shows come up and new topics are put up so that you can be aware and listen. Also, while you're on the website, you can write in with questions or you can call us with questions. We have a phone number. It's 206-250-3428. Again, that's 206-250-3428. And if you call with a question, you'll leave a message. We'll get it. We'll answer and we'll play both the question and the answer on the show.
We'd love to hear from you and find out what questions you might have or topics you'd like us to cover.
Also, while you're on the website, if you want to listen to Pro Money Talk on the go, you can listen to it on your cell phone.
There's a button on the website that says mobilize this episode. And if you click on that, you'll be asked to just enter your mobile phone number. And then I guess all the instructions are sent to your cell phone. And that's fantastic. So you don't have to have an iPod to listen on the go anymore.
Yeah, and for people who may be a little less tech savvy, some of your friends who you've talked to about the show, you might want to also mention that to them so that they can get it. So once again, you can do all that just by going to our website at promoneytalk.com. Now, Peter, you did the interview with Norm. Tell our listeners why they should, well, first of all, briefly maybe say what an investment policy statement is. I know Norm goes into more detail on this on the interview, but what it is and why our listeners should care.
Well, real briefly, an investment policy statement is sort of a memorandum of understanding between an advisor and an investment client, which spells out the guidelines that the advisor is going to follow in implementing the investment strategy. It's also a golden opportunity for a dialogue between the advisor and the client on what the goals of the investor are, what the preferences are. And I think people have different things they want to avoid sometimes or different things that they want to encourage. And it tightens up the relationship. These investment policy statements are required for fiduciary relationships. So if an advisor is working with a pension plan, trusts, or foundations, it's required by law, but it actually is pretty good practice for individuals as well.
Now, what I found fascinating when I was listening to the show was that Norm really brought up a good point, and that was that even people who don't work with advisors, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are trying to are at the stage in their lives now where maybe they're not working with an advisor yet, but they're on track. So something that Norm mentioned that I thought was really interesting was that having these rules of investing, if you will, sort of laid out and written down is really beneficial, whether it's between you and your advisor or just for you yourself, because it's sort of like having a company mission statement. It's something that you can go back to and bounce everything off of. So, for instance, when the markets start going down and you get afraid and you want to sell and people are doing all sorts of irrational stuff that seems like a good idea at the time, you can go back to this investment policy statement if you have a planner, or an investment policy statement if you don't, that you've written up for yourself, and go back and bounce that off and say, okay, I wrote this out being rational, and here we go. Here's tough times or good times. Are the decisions that I'm about to make consistent with the plan that I set forth?
I think it's really important for investors to have rules and a plan. In fact, the people I know who make a living investing for themselves get into trouble when they abandon their own rules. And they say it's not important how you work, but that you have a consistent approach to how you work because it works. So, good point.
Yeah. And really, any of our listeners then, obviously we get feedback from a lot of professionals, and this will be a really interesting topic to them because, to be honest, not a lot of people use investment policy statements at this point with the average investor, and this is sort of a best practice that people should use. So it'll be of course, interesting to the professionals. It'll be interesting to the people who work with planners, because a lot of them probably don't have one, and it's certainly something that they may want to bring up with their professional because it's really beneficial.
And Norm Boone is not only prominent in the financial planning industry, but he also is the author of a book on the topic called Creating an Investment Policy Statement, which he co-authored with Linda Lovitz, and also the founder of a website called IPS Advisor Pro. IPS Advisor Pro is a website where professionals can go to find templates and guidelines and keep the information up to date online for their clients. So Norm is the go-to guy for this stuff. In the interest of full disclosure, we did help the Financial Planning Association publish Norm's book. We don't really recommend the book for the average consumer. That's more for the professional. But we felt that Norm had an interesting area of expertise that would benefit our listeners. So,
yeah, absolutely. And again, I'd encourage the listeners who don't work with the planner to listen to this and think, when you're talking about the planner-client relationship, think of themselves as both the planner and the client, because you can be successful doing things yourself if you have discipline. And certainly, as Peter said, a disciplined approach to investing is key. And if you write that plan down and stick to it, you're going to be a lot more successful. And Norm mentions, I think somewhere in the show, actually the percentage increase that people get by sticking to a plan and not abandoning it. I think it's somewhere between 3-4% additional on average per year. That's
which could
amazing.
Be a doubling of return.
Yeah, and that's significant. So this is very valuable to all our listeners, and I certainly found it gratifying to hear both of you talk about it.
Cool. Glad you enjoyed it. Yeah. With that, let's start the interview. We're here today with Norm Boone, who is the founder and principal of Mosaic Financial Partners in San Francisco. Norm has been cited as one of America's best financial advisors by Worth Magazine. Every year, the list has been published since 1994, and as one of the best financial advisors for doctors by Medical Economics Magazine 4 times. Mutual Funds Magazine named him one of the 100 best financial planners. Mr. Boone earned his Certified Financial Planner certification in 1984 after receiving his undergraduate education at Stanford University and his MBA in finance from the Harvard Business School. Welcome to the show, Norm.
Thank you, Peter. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you. Pleased to have you on the show. Sometimes we talk about the big picture in our podcasts, and today we're going to be talking about a detail, but one that can really improve the relationship between the consumer and the professional. So since we have both kinds of listeners in our audience, we'll talk about it from both perspectives. You have written a book about creating investment policy statements, and you've got a website that helps professionals put them together and do some other things. What is an investment policy statement?
Well, that is the essential first question. An investment policy statement is a written document that addresses all of the agreements that should exist between an advisor and a client. From the consumer's perspective, probably the biggest question from, you know, when you start working with a new advisor is, well, what's going to happen to me? What is this advisor going to be doing? And the ideal investment policy statement should be clear about what the advisor's philosophies are and specifically what kinds of things they're going to be using to invest in your money. For example, are they going to be investing in U.S. stocks or international stocks? Are they going to be investing in bonds, and how much of the portfolio will be in bonds? It talks a little bit about and documents your investment objectives. It documents how much risk you're willing to take. It documents how often you're going to be meeting, and you know, how often the communication and what the reports are going to consist of, and how the advisor is going to make the decisions. All of those kinds of things are things that a normal investor, consumer, ought to know from the advisor before they give the advisor the money to work with them. And that's really the intent from the consumer perspective.
As I was preparing for the show and giving this some thought, it occurred to me that in many kinds of endeavors, the provider of the service can guarantee what the end result will be. In investment work, we cannot guarantee what the outcome will be. So the investment policy statement focuses on the behavior and the practices, which gives some control over the process and hopefully the desired results.
Yeah, in legal terms, you know, court case after court case, the focus is on the process that the advisor took with the client, not the outcome. So that, for example, with a pension plan, and a pension plan ends up losing a lot of money, what the court will look at is not whether the decisions ended up being good or bad or whether there was actually a loss of money. The court will focus first on whether the process that they went through by which they made the decisions was reasonable or not. So did you diversify? Did you try to keep your costs controlled? Did you monitor the investments on a regular basis? Did you choose to make the investments in a selection process that made sense? And if you went through those processes consistently and thoughtfully, then the court is less concerned whether there was an actual loss or not. The assumption, obviously, is that if you go through the process consistently over time, you're going to do fine. The market goes up and down, and people don't have control over that. So you're absolutely right. You don't have control over the end results in that sense. But historically, if you've done the right process consistently over time, if the market goes up over time, your investments will go up over time as well.
So it really sounds like it's an important thing for investors to have some sense of what their advisors are going to do for them and how they're going to do it. And it's a chance to communicate how that process works and build some expectations in. But it's also important for advisors to use investment policy statements. Maybe you could say something about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Having an investment policy statement is considered best practice within the investment community. So advisors that want to be at the leading edge of what's happening, you know, ought to be using investment policy statements for every one of their clients. It is, in fact, a required document for many clients. If you're working with an ERISA client would include a 401k, a profit-sharing plan, a pension plan, similar kinds of retirement plans that are company-sponsored. The ERISA Act of 1974 requires that there be a clear investment policy. And the only way you can have a clear investment policy is if you have a written policy. The Uniform Prudent Investor Act, which is now adopted by most states in the country, has to do with trust law and behavior. The also known as the UPIA, the UPIA law requires that there is, in fact, a written investment policy statement everywhere where there is a trust. In that kind of a situation, you have assets that need to be managed by one person for the benefit of another person. And where you have that kind of circumstance, it's known as a fiduciary relationship. Where that fiduciary relationship exists, there has to be a written investment policy statement. So from an advisor perspective, in order to meet the requirements of the law, many of your clients' situations require an investment policy. For the individual client, there is not a legal requirement to do it, but my question is always, if it's right for the other kinds of clients, why wouldn't it be right for your individual clients? Moreover, having an investment policy statement is truly important because it provides a record of what the mindset of the client was. If you do a full investment policy statement, you're writing down what the client's circumstances were, what their objectives were, what their thinking was, what the restrictions that they gave you were, so that, you know, many circumstances you find that you're working with an investor, the client dies, the nieces and nephews say, gee, how come you didn't do well and do this and that and the other thing? Well, if you've got a record of what the client instructed you to do, they have no ground to stand on. So it really protects you by documenting what it was that the agreements were from the client's perspective for you to move forward in that fashion.
Good point. We're not just dealing with the client in some cases.
That's exactly right. The other one thing that I would add to that is that one of the biggest mistakes that consumers make in an ongoing investment arena is that they make emotional decisions. You know, when the market goes up, they get excited and they want to buy more of something that's working well. When the market goes down, they get scared and they want to sell out. And having a thoughtful discussion and then documenting the agreements that come out of that thoughtful discussion allow investors to be less emotional in the process. It's always possible to say, well, Mrs. Smith, remember our investment policy statement. Let's pull it out. And we said that we understood that the market would sometimes go down 5 or 10 or 15%, depending on the agreements that you reach, and that you said that that would be acceptable. So let's not get too excited about this. Let's stay with the program. And my experience is that oftentimes when the investors remember that they had that conversation in a more rational time, that they're willing to stick with the program, which gets them through some of the difficulties of the market and usually puts them further ahead than if they sell out at the wrong time and then are afraid to buy back in.
Sounds like it lays a good groundwork. So what are the key elements of an investment policy statement?
Well, there are a whole variety of them, but let's go over just a, you know, kind of a quick outline. You clearly need to talk about the client's goals and purposes. You need to talk about timing issues. Are they going to be putting money in? When are they going to do it? When are they going to be withdrawing money? When is all of that going to happen? You need to talk about the client's risk tolerance, and in other words, their willingness to be exposed to levels of volatility. You need to talk about the degree of client involvement. Is this going to be a fully discretionary account where the advisor is making all of the decision and simply sends a report to the client and periodically has a conversation, or is the client going to be involved in every decision that's going to be made? And there's no right or wrong way, and different advisors and different clients have different needs in that regard. Limits and concentrations. When a portfolio comes in and it has 40% of it in IBM stock, as an example, from an investment advisor perspective, that's not a well-diversified portfolio. You need to have some discussion about what are you going to do about that. Are you going to have a program to create a greater diversification, or are you going to leave it there, and under what circumstances might you change those circumstances? Tax bases and tax issues. Different clients obviously have different tax needs, and being able to work with the tax situation in an effective and efficient manner is always important for a taxable investor, for individuals, and having an understanding of what those tax circumstances are and an agreement as to how sensitive you're going to be with regards to the taxes. We often have situations, I'm sure you do in your own practice, that we'll take on a new portfolio and we'll come to an agreement with a client that sort of says, gee, we got a lot of things here that if we were to sell them in order to improve the portfolio, you would incur some taxes. How much are you willing to incur, you know, this year? And they might say, well, gee, okay, I'll take $10,000 in gains this year. Well, that tells you how much of a change you can make this year, and presumably then you have an agreement each year going forward until you get the portfolio structured the way that you want to. But having a documentation with regards to what the agreement was is important in that regard. Do they have income needs? You know, are they going to be taking out $3,000, $5,000 a month or whatever from the portfolio, or is it going to all be contributions to the portfolio overall? What's the investment philosophy? Is it going to be, you're going to be using active managers that are choosing individual stocks and trying to beat the market, or are you going to be using a passive index approach to the portfolio? How are you going to treat costs? Are you going to use stocks or funds or separate account managers? Are you going to do tactical maneuvering between different asset classes and different kinds of investments? Or are you going to be more strategic and long-term and not make many of those short-term movements? Rebalancing. Are you going to be dealing with rebalancing issues? Rebalancing from a portfolio perspective would mean, as an example, if you have 25% of your portfolio that's supposed to be large-cap U.S. stocks, and that rises to 35% because that part of the market has done particularly well, that changes the very nature of the portfolio. It changes the risk that you're taking in the portfolio. It changes the return characteristics, et cetera. And because markets tend to go up and down, if you periodically move that allocation back down to the target 25%, or if it lost money and went down to 18%, you move it back to 25%. In both cases, what you're systematically doing is buying low and selling high, because you're selling the things that have done very well, and you're buying the things that have done poorly. Now, that's counterintuitive, but over the long run, because things tend to go up and down, you tend often to add to the returns of a portfolio by half, three-quarters of a percent per year over time when you do that kind of active rebalancing. Managing assets across different account types. An individual typically will have, you know, his retirement account, her retirement account, maybe a joint account, maybe an account that they've set aside to buy a second home, and maybe they've got an account for their kids. Are you going to deal with each of those portfolios separately so that they're each a complete portfolio, or are you going to treat all of those accounts in aggregate as a single portfolio and just simply maintain the account identity, which you need to for legal purposes? Different managers have different approaches there, and clarifying how you're going to do that is important in that regard. Outside investments, are you going to be dealing with if someone has an outside investment in real estate, does that mean then that your portfolio doesn't have any real estate in it, or do you ignore that? There isn't a right or a wrong answer there, but having a clarity about how you're going to treat those issues is important in that regard. What's the asset allocation that you're going to be using? Again, asset allocation is a fundamental decision with regards to how you go about dealing with an investment portfolio, and you need to be clear about what that's going to look like. Stocks, bonds, cash, alternative investments, international, U.S., small, large, value, growth, all of those kinds of things are issues that go into the mixture of designing an ideal allocation for each individual client.
In that area, many people have preferences. They may say, I want socially responsible investments, or I don't want foreign stocks. So there'll be restrictions on some kinds of investments, and that's where you assign ranges of percentages to different kinds of assets as well, that you never want to have more than 20% in cash or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a perfect kind of example. You mentioned the socially responsible. We have a number of clients that want socially responsible investments in their portfolios. And how do you make sure that you're satisfying the client's desires and needs in that regard? We put it into our investment policy statement so that there's an open agreement that we've both said, okay, that's what we're agreeing to. And the investment policy statement is signed by both the client and by the advisor in our case, so that there's an acknowledgement that this reflects our understandings and agreements.
We could have a whole discussion about socially responsible investments, because different people have different sense of what is appropriate and what isn't. Nuclear power, I think, is shifting a bit. And there aren't always great vehicles in all the asset classes to accomplish that.
Absolutely true.
So it's challenging. It sounds like there's a lot of work that goes into this, and a lot of education, a lot of discussion. Do you write a book for each client, or how long do these documents grow to?
We have, as you mentioned, some software to help advisors write an investment policy statement. And the software really offers kind of two varieties, if you will. One of them is a standard investment policy, which is just kind of an outline, and that's really only a page or two. And it identifies the topic and in a very short way writes down the answer, what the asset allocation is or how much risk they're willing to take, et cetera. Or we have what we refer to as the professional, the more detailed one, which usually is appropriate for wealthier clients where there's more complexity and it's there's more need to be more detailed in the description and the agreements.
Well, I think I'm getting talked into spending some more money here.
Good.
This is good stuff. I don't want to leave the consumers behind. This is a professional discussion we've gotten off into. But I think sometimes it's helpful for the average investor or person looking at financial planning to understand what advisors go through in this process. And if they're looking for their advisor to develop an investment policy statement for them, now they have a place to tell their advisor to go and take a look, which could be helpful too.
Yeah, and I from a consumer perspective, I think that when you're looking for an advisor, one of the questions that the interview questions that you should ask is, do you use investment policy? Will you use an investment policy statement for me? Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, you kind of don't care what they do for everybody else. You care what they do for me. So ask the question directly. And if the answer is yes, then you can say, can I see some sample investment policy statements you've done for other clients like me so that you get a sense of whether they really do them and how complete they are in that process. It should be easy enough for that advisor to produce those kinds of samples. And again, in my view, if an advisor is not doing investment policy statements, they may not be disclosing all of the things that they need to share with you as a consumer about how they do their business with their clients. So it's very important in that perspective. A number of your consumers don't use advisors. They do it themselves. And there's less specific need for an investment policy statement in that regard, but I would advise even those people that having a written document that sort of sets out your plan and your program so that you can refer back to it and say, well, okay, so what was my intention and what was my thinking, 6 months ago before the market turned south or whatever, is oftentimes a very calming influence to give you some guidance and keep you more objective and less emotional as you make your decisions about how you're going to manage your portfolio. So even for the self-directed portfolio, I think that having some kind of documentation about what your plan was and why that's your plan is a good idea.
I have a good friend who manages his own portfolio professionally. He was an advisor, and he got into trouble at one point, and he realized that he was in trouble because he wasn't following his own rules.
Exactly. And over and over and over again, you know, the reason why people get in trouble is because they set out to do one thing and then something happens and they change their mind about it. And when we change our minds, typically we're changing our minds in the wrong direction at the wrong time. And, one of the things that we talked about beforehand about, kind of what we were going to cover, the problem that we see that individual investors have more often than anything else is that, you know, they make a reasonable decision about an investment here and they make a good decision here and maybe this isn't so good, but it's not so bad. And, you know, most of the decisions, people that have money to invest are not stupid, okay? And so they don't make stupid decisions willy-nilly most of the time. But they have an aggregate of decisions that together don't necessarily make a lot of sense. They like technology, so they've bought a lot of technology stocks, each of which may be excellent. But when you look at the total portfolio that is 60% technology or 90% technology, it's probably not a well-diversified, sound portfolio in the process. And that's not to speak against technology. It could be anything. But
real estate, maybe.
Maybe. but you know, from my perspective, you need to start with the really big picture. What am I trying to accomplish? And what should the portfolio look like in terms of how much cash, how much stocks, how much bonds, how much real estate, how much alternative investments, and get that big structure settled first. And again, that's an essential part of the investment policy process.
That's a very good point. You mentioned in the book on page 26 that the most common investment mistake is the helter-skelter portfolios, which are built piece by piece, individual decision by individual decision. We see that a lot. We see clients come in with 6 or 8 IRAs at different institutions. They don't even remember when they got it or what their purpose was or what they were thinking at the time. So this would be a good time to mention the book and the website, I think. The book is called Creating an Investment Policy Statement, and the website is IPS Advisor Pro, which is at www.ipsadvisorpro.com. And, of course, we put links and so on in the show notes so people can go to the website, Pro Money Talk, and find these references. Why did you undertake, building a website and writing a book on this subject?
Well, my partner and I, Linda Lubitz, have been working on this topic in this arena since 1992. We wrote our first article and have written several since that time. Given a number of speeches to the professional audiences, talking about the importance of having an investment policy statement in the relationship between the advisor and the client. We think it is the central step in the investment process. And that where an investment policy statement, where an agreement has not been reached with clients with regards to each one of the issues that I talked about, then somebody's going to get surprised and somebody's going to get disappointed, whether it's the advisor, whether it's the client. There's going to be things that are going to come up that are just unexpected. And the more we believe that there can be that understanding, the better the relationship. In our experience, as you go through that process, it's wonderful for the education of the client because the client oftentimes doesn't think about many of these issues. It's a great opportunity for the advisor to build a trust between the advisor and the client. And obviously trust is important for retaining the client over the long run. And for all the legal reasons that we talked about earlier, having an investment policy statement is so important. So we've kind of been missionaries in the field of trying to convince our colleagues within the profession of the importance of using an investment policy statement, and it is now considered a best practice within the profession.
So how many advisors do you think use investment policy statements at this point? Is it growing?
When we did a talk and started asking our audience how many people use an investment policy statement, maybe there'd be one or two hands in the audience that would go up. But more recently, I would say that 60% of advisors occasionally use an investment policy statement, maybe for a big client or for a specific ERISA client where it's required or whatever. But 80%, maybe even 90% of clients are not using it on a consistent basis still. So there's still lots of room for our missionary work.
Well, as time goes on, we all strive to make our practices better and better. And this is a learning experience for me, as it often is when I'm interviewing people. Advisors aren't born knowing how to do this. So you've provided questionnaires and forms and language that advisors can use, and also a thorough discussion in the book about what this whole process is about, some of the history of the law and the fiduciary responsibility in a little more detail.
Yeah, it's important for almost anything that we do, I think, to have some perspective and understand the rationale for why I should do something. And once you do that, you then have an incentive to do it. And then the next question is, well, how do we do it? And we've tried to address that issue as well. So thank you for those comments.
Yeah. Is there anything I left out about the key elements of the investment policy statement? I think you have a section on selecting and monitoring advisors, which would be the sub-advisors, if you will, the selecting mutual funds, for instance.
Yeah, one of the ways in which many advisors are helping clients manage money these days is by, well, there are sort of three approaches. There is the traditional stockbroker approach that says, gee, I'm going to buy stocks and bonds for you and put those in your portfolio. There is the advisor that uses mutual funds or exchange-traded funds and sort of packaged products, if you will, and combines them in such a way that it serves the client appropriately. And the third way uses what are referred to oftentimes as separate account managers. Those are the money managers that will manage money for $250,000 or $500,000 or $5 million or whatever it may be. And then as an advisor, you combine those various managers in order to make an effective approach, because usually those managers aren't as skilled in all areas as they are in one or two areas, and so you usually want to give them the money for them to invest in the areas where they are best and use other managers that are best in other areas and combine them to create an effective, diversified portfolio. And when you use that approach, you need to have some understanding of, one, how are you choosing those people? Two, how are you monitoring them? Three, under what circumstances would you choose to not use them, to sell out, in effect, and go find another manager? And thinking through that process ahead of time is always very important. And again, it takes away the element of surprise and disappointment between the client and the advisor.
And then finally, everybody signs it, as you mentioned.
Yeah, from our perspective, the act of signing, it's not a contract, but it's an acknowledgement that, yes, this is kind of what we've talked about, and this reflects my opinion. And I'm sure some legal scholars would disagree as to the legal status of that signed document. But we really try to get our clients to understand that it's not a legal contract in any means. It's just simply us asking them to say, yes, this reflects my understanding of what I want to have happen with my money. And from our perspective, that's important because it signifies the importance of the document.
So you might call it maybe a memorandum of understanding.
That's a great description. Exactly.
So if you draw this up, people change, times change. Do you look at these documents and revise them from time to time?
Great question. Life changes, and your investment needs change. The way an advisor thinks a portfolio ought to be managed is going to change. So, we think that at minimum, you ought to be sitting down with the client every couple of years and going through the investment policy statement and just confirming that it still is appropriate or, make any changes. If a section of the investment policy statement is the client circumstances are always going to change and require a little bit of update in that regard. And it may be that none of the specifics in the investments change, but periodically we find that, we've decided to add a different asset class to the portfolio, or we're going to change it from a 60% stock to a 65% stock portfolio or whatever. And each of those changes we treat as amendments to that investment policy statement, so that on an ongoing basis, when we're making those policy changes, we're amending the document, and then periodically we go back and solidify, those amendments and update anything else that needs to be reflected, so that this living document really is continues to be currently reflective of the current agreement.
Yeah, we make certain changes from time to time, and we've added some asset classes,
exactly.
In recent times. It seems like every time we get together and talk with clients, there's more opportunity to get in tune with each other and maybe provide more value to the client. Find out they're involved in something or there's some grandchild they'd really like to help, and it provides a new opportunity for financial planning. So any discussion is a good one. And since we do comprehensive financial planning, I'm afraid to use that term because we really don't know everything about everything, but we try to look at their whole financial life. We're not just focusing on investments. And so discussing their goals and their life situation is a great opportunity to delve into those other areas and for things to come up.
Absolutely. A classic example, when you're dealing with an individual client as opposed to a pension plan or something, but when you're dealing with an individual client, one of the central questions is, what rate of return do I need for my portfolio in addition to my savings and the withdrawals that I'm expecting and the assets that I have in the account at this particular point? What rate of return do I need so that I won't run out of money over the rest of my life? That requires a financial planning calculation in the process of, what do you need to do and what can we expect from Social Security and from any other resources you might have and from your lifestyle that you're going to be expending. And all of those go beyond just a pure investment management process. But as you know, as a financial planner and me as a financial planner, the integration of investment management and financial planning is really critical. You can't just do investment management without asking a lot of financial planning questions. And I think one of the traditional failures of the old brokerage world has been that they treat investments as a standalone entity. And there are just too many things that impact on what should be the appropriate decisions for an investment portfolio. And if you're not asking those questions and having those conversations and doing the analysis that's required for them, you're oftentimes going to make the wrong decisions on the investment side.
In the brokerage world, they have the document call or the requirement that
standard.
You know your client
right.
rule, and it's very, very basic and cursory.
Well, typically it's simply a check the box. This client wants growth versus income. This client, is willing to take some risk or a lot of risk. Checking a couple of boxes does not a full conversation and a full relationship make. And the difference between simply treating the investments on your own and a know your client standard and really having a fiduciary standard where you're truly understanding the total picture of that client and taking that client's best interest at heart are really different animals.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a great opportunity to deepen the relationship. I'm curious about the website. I haven't subscribed, but obviously it's easier for us to use tools that are well thought through than to create our own in many instances. Why a website? Why not, you know, a forum in a book?
When we first came out with some software, we were affiliated with Ibbotson and did kind of a joint venture with Ibbotson Associates, and we had Word templates, and we had 7 different Word templates for the 7 different client types, and we've added an 8th client type in the website, that being insurance policies and insurance trusts. But so very quickly, an individual, which would be a single person or a husband and wife family or a couple, got a family trust, which would be a second type. You have a charitable trust. You have an endowment or foundation. You have the 3 ERISA types, a self-directed 401k, a defined contribution, typically a profit-sharing plan, and a defined benefit, typically a pension plan. Those would be the 7, and then the 8th would be the insurance policy, insurance trust kind of situation. So each of those requires different issues and different questions and commentary. So we've structured it to reflect the differences of each of those types. So what we've done is put a front end to the verbiage being a questionnaire, and the questionnaire goes through each of the essential parts of each of the essential topics that we've talked about earlier in this conversation, and gets answers to those things. And the questionnaires in many cases are open-ended areas where you can write 3 pages or 2 words. Those answers then flow into the verbiage document to create an investment policy statement. And as an advisor, you have an opportunity to make any changes in the words, just the way it would be a Word document, but you can then do it one time, and as a particularly with a larger firm, you have some concerns about how people are going to go about changing the Word document. In this approach, they can't make the changes to the template. They can only fill in the questions to the questionnaire. So the firm overall has a more consistent approach and a more thorough approach to the process.
So one last question. We have a lot of international listeners. What is the scope, or can you speak to the use of investment policy statements in other countries besides the United States?
The only place that I know that there is an active movement in this regard is in Australia. Australia has, I've forgotten the label exactly, but there's a statement of investment activity or something along those lines that is similar to an investment policy statement. It's not exactly the same, but it's quite similar. And, you know, I think the Australians have, as they often do, a really good job of being at the forefront of these kinds of things. We just got back from a trip to Italy where we visited an Italian financial planner friend of ours who is trying to adopt many of the best practices around the world, and he's looking at making use of our software and then translating it to Italian. But, it would work, but it's an extra step or two. But the concept of the process is a global one, okay? How you actually implement it, which specific investments you choose, is a next step in the process and doesn't address the question of the initial setting up of the agreements and how are we going to make the decisions that we're going to be making along the way. So in my view, the investment policy statement process is one that is applicable everywhere. You know, how it actually happens is open to some question.
My impression is that about 80% of financial planning is the same around the world. The same issues, the same approaches will work for everybody. There's some differences in regards to tax laws or retirement plans or investment pooled funds, but the same issues are everywhere.
Yeah, fundamentally, I think that's correct.
So it's increasingly a global profession. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for being on the show and for opening up our eyes to how rich this process can be and how important it is. And So thanks so much.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure, Peter. It was nice seeing you again.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks, Peter. That was a fantastic interview.
Well, I hope it was interesting and useful to our listeners.
Well, it was interesting and useful to me. And I know we have a lot of professional listeners, and I know it was interesting and useful to them. And I know we also have a lot of clients and people who are successful professionals who aren't in our industry. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is something that's just as valuable for them.
Well, we are always trying to do shows that will appeal to the consumer and also to the professionals, because we do have both kinds of listeners. And we certainly would welcome feedback from you out there in the audience by email, on the website, whatever way you want to get in touch with us, phone. Let us know if these shows are relevant and useful to you, if they're interesting. We welcome suggestions on topics. There are so many things to talk about, and we want to cover a lot of different ground, and sometimes even how the industry works might be helpful in people, for the consumer, in working with people that are in the industry. But this show, I think, covers the ground on both sides pretty well.
Yeah, and we'd really like to, as Peter mentioned, get feedback from our listeners to specifically, we're asking for what types of shows you find particularly valuable to you. Enough said on that. You can contact us, like Peter said, from the website. That's promoneytalk.com. And we have a form there that you can fill out that'll email us. You can also send us a voice message, area code 206-250-3428. Once again, that's 206-250-3428. And you can use that to just leave us a message or to ask us a question. And again, we'll play the question on the air and answer it on the air. You can also sign up for our mailing list while you're on the website. And if you're on the mailing list, we'll give you a heads up when new shows come out and what topics they're covering, and you can listen.
And we're going to have some special offers coming up soon.
We are.
I believe there's some piece of apparel that we'll be offering soon.
We do. We have some special offers for our listeners coming up, and the first people who are going to get a crack at that are our mailing list people, and if there are any left after that, then the non-mailing people may get a chance.
Well, maybe we should require that people submit a question in order to earn one of these fine items. Mystery items.
One of these mystery items. You know what? That's a great idea. So we'll probably talk about it on the next show a little bit more as well. But why don't we do that? The people who get at the top of the list are the people who are submitting a question or feedback. In fact, the people who do it via telephone will be at the very top of the list.
Because they get
like
two.
Because we'd like to get that piece going. We hope you found that enjoyable, and we look forward to hearing from you.
We have some interesting shows coming up. We will have one of our industry commentators on talking about kind of how society's changing, which I think is interesting. And I was just speaking with a gentleman who lives and works in Scotland. He's a financial planner over there, and he agreed today to be on a show coming up too.
And we've got a lot of great guests coming up. Susan Woodward, former chief economist of the SEC, is on tap. We're just trying to schedule that right now. And also some shows that our listeners have suggested. We just got a suggestion this past week to do a show on bonds, and I think that's a fantastic idea. There's so much about bonds that people don't understand. They think they're the safe, non-exciting investment, and a lot of times they can be very fun and very volatile. So hopefully that'll be coming up soon as well. Well, thanks again for listening to Pro Money Talk. I'm Jason Papier.
And I am Peter Johnson.
And here's to your success.